my friends, to the That's Ball Folks podcast. I'm your host, Josh Reynolds. This is episode 9, and I'm not exaggerating. This might be the most excited I've ever been for an episode. Like, typically, I'll write down a bunch of notes throughout the week of just what's happening and things I want to talk about, and I have little bullet points and stuff that I go through. I might not even, like, look at my notes. I could talk about Embiid coming back and the women's Final Four. The guys, too, but just the women's Final Four matchups. I think I could talk about that for hours. So I'm really excited for this episode. Again, Embiid's back. His long-awaited return. We talk about the MVP race and how that's taking shape. How about the Timberwolves and kind of the mess and nightmare that they're in with the sell? Not on the court, but off the court stuff. The Final Four, like I mentioned, the guys' side. Zach Edey, DJ Burns, UConn, Alabama. And then the women's side. Holy moly. Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Juju Watkins, Paige. Ugh. Just basketball at its finest. Let's start with Embiid, though. And before we do that, how's everybody doing? Again, I'm just so excited. I want to jump right into it. It has been just the longest awaited return. Embiid hasn't played since January 30th. And I said it last week. Time is weird. Time has been very strange. It feels like the fact he's missed, almost 30 games just feels bizarre. Doesn't feel right. Time is just, it's tripping me out. But we're back, and Embiid is back. He, in his return, played almost 30 minutes, and he had a really good game. Obviously, he was gassed. Obviously, there's some rust. And guess what? There's only so much you can do to get him back to game speed without actually playing in games. So, of course, the most important part is just getting him back in there, getting him to actually play games. He finishes with 24 points, 6 boards, 7 dimes, 3 steals. He was perfect from the free throw line, 12 for 12. Solid defensively. He actually had the game sealing steal on Josh Giddey and pulled out the win. Kelly Oubre Jr., he is the man. Tobias Harris is not. We don't have to dive into that. But how about Kelly Oubre Jr.? Like, he is straight up the reason that the Sixers even won that game. Period. He was fantastic in the minutes that Embiid was off the floor, but he was absolutely fantastic in the fourth quarter. In the fourth alone, he had 17 of his 25 points. He was 6 for 7 from the field, 4 for 4 from 3. He was a plus 10. And honestly, what was most impressive was him on the defensive side. Which, again, let me repeat that. Kelly Oubre Jr., the most impressive part of his game last night was on the defensive side of the ball. I didn't think you were going to hear that. I haven't seen that from him all year yet, but seeing him actively engaged on the defensive end, kind of buying in, Embiid just pumped life into this lineup, and him, again, being engaged just was fantastic. They were running pick and rolls with him and Embiid, kind of that dribble handoff in crunch time. It was just beautiful to see. Kelly Oubre, we already know he is the man from his gestures to the refs that we talked about last episode, but he just continues to improve and impress, and I was fantastic. And honestly, who knows what the Sixer squad can look like when things actually start clicking and taking shape? Like, DeAnthony Melton, he's not back yet. He was warming up pregame, did a little warm-up. He's out with the back. Who knows what his time frame looks like, but actually seeing him on the court practicing was more than I thought. Tyrese Maxey, he was out. He missed last night's game. And again, Embiid hasn't played with like half this roster. Lowry, it was their first game together. He's just solid, man. He is so solid. He took a charge late that ended up being huge. Campaign. How about Campaign? He did exactly what we needed him to do. He had 10 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. Fantastic game. Now, something that is funny, because myself included, that I was afraid of and that Sixers fans were afraid of at the deadline was the drop-off that we were going to see when we traded Patrick Beverley. Campaign and Kyle Lowry have both been terrific. For all those box score watchers, which I know there's a lot of you, you'll look at it and only see the Kyle Lowry at 4 points and be like, ah. Lowry is literally the definition of a dude who does all of those things that don't show up on the stat sheet. He makes winning plays. He's a winning player. He's an annoying winning player, but he's a winning player. I love it, man. And again, we didn't even dive into Buddy Hield. Nick Nurse talked about it a little bit post-game of like, hey, I would love to see this kind of dribble handoff action between Joel Embiid and Buddy Hield, kind of mimicking what J.J. Redick and Embiid did. That's the dream. We'll see if that takes shape. But, man, good. Overall, just fantastic return for Joel Embiid. Obviously, a huge win against the Thunder. Yes, they had a couple guys sitting out and key guys sitting out, but that's a big win. That's a very impressive win. So what's next for the Sixers? Well, a lot is next. They are at Miami next, actually tomorrow. I am curious to see if Embiid plays in that one on a day's rest. I'm more curious to see how his knee responds to playing 30 minutes right out of the gate. The Sixers have a lot. 4 games in 6 days. It's going to be real interesting to see with Embiid, again, how his knee responds, but if he actually plays, if there is some type of minute restriction moving forward, who knows? Obviously, you can't control that, right? You have to take care of him because the main goal is for him to be healthy and in shape going into the playoffs. That's what you got to focus on. But you want to try to win some of these games to steal some and move up, especially against Miami, because the Sixers currently sit a game and a half behind the Heat for 7th, who beat the Knicks last night, and the Pacers are a half game ahead of Miami. So realistically, could the Sixers move into 7th? Is that realistic? Obviously, the game in Miami tomorrow is going to be a good indicator, but I don't know. Personally, I would much rather play Milwaukee than Boston in the first round. So if we can move into that 7th spot or win that play-in game and get that spot, that's what I want to do. Get Boston, not until the conference finals. Milwaukee is a hot mess right now. A dumpster fire, even if you want to say that. And I can because they are coming off to a loss against the Wizards last night. That's bad. Doc Rivers has these dudes not playing very good basketball at all. But he's doing what he does. He mixes these lineups and then just like fascinates over one and sticks with it whether it works or not. And right now, he's fixated on Bobby Portis, and he's closing games with him rather than Brooke Lopez. And I love it. If I were a Bucks fan, I would be furious, and I would hate it. But I love it, and I want them. I really do. Obviously, they've got the two big names. They've got Giannis. They've got Lillard. Like, that's scary. Great. But the Bucks, they don't scare me. They really don't. I want that 7 seed really bad. Give me Milwaukee round 1. Let Miami play Boston round 1. Let them take care of their business. We'll take care of ours. We'll all be happy. Let us bottom feeders in the East just do our thing. Let us eat. We're thrilled. I love it. I love it. Let's talk MVP for a second. I think that Luka deserves to have more of an actual presence in this conversation. Now, people are talking like Jokic has just run away with it. It's over. And I don't think so. Well, I think maybe in the voters' eyes he has, but I don't think it should. It's a 3-man race. Jokic, Shea, and Luka. If I had to put money on it, I'm going to say that Jokic is going to win it again. But if I had a vote, I'm putting it on Luka right now. And that's not even me being a hater. Luka is on a historic run right now. He's averaging 29-9-8 on 58% effective shooting. And his playoff numbers, his averages are 33-9-8 on 55% effective shooting. Dallas is clicking at the right time. Kyrie's bought in. Seems like he's actually having fun. Their deadline pickups of Gafford and PJ Washington, they're fitting perfect. Their rotation's taking shape. I really like the Mavs. And I think Luka deserves some serious, serious consideration in this conversation. I'm just a little afraid that it's too late. But I think he deserves it. And especially if Denver ends up with the first seed, I think that's about all she wrote. You can pack that thing up. Let's stick with the NBA. And how about the T-Wolves? Again, on the court, they're doing their thing. That's great. I think they're currently sitting in 2nd in the West. That's awesome. But off the court with this whole sale thing. Now, we all know years ago that they sold to A-Rod and a group there to take over the Wolves. Basically, this is what happened. He was given a price. They agreed on that price. He was given a deadline to pay. He didn't meet the deadline. Now, all of a sudden, the Wolves are valued at almost double the price that they agreed on to sell for. So the sale's called off because he didn't get his money. Shams reported that, hey, this is going to get really ugly. He said that A-Rod feels like he is the reason that he brought this like new aura to the franchise since he became the owner and that he's part of this turnaround on the court. And Shams is reporting that this is going to go to court. Yikes. Yikes, yikes. But also fun because drama. And I'm all about that as an NBA fan. Give me all the drama. I want to tell you about the easiest way to get some action on the NBA. It's Underdog Fantasy and their Pick'em game. Just pick over or under on your favorite or least favorite player stats, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. You can also pick from Rivals, which pits two players against each other for a head-to-head matchup. Underdog keeps it super simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your Pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use the code TBF24, that's TBF24, and get your first deposit doubled up to $100 by Underdog. Underdog Fantasy, the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports.
Our attorney said we needed to create an ad and tell people to stop snorting Buffed. So here you go. Don't snort Buffed. Killer energy too powerful for a can. Made with 3 organic mushrooms, 4 nootropics, B vitamins, electrolytes, and caffeine, and flavors that f***. It doesn't taste like dirt. It's refreshing and delicious. Buffed.
Calling all golfers. Do you have a problem 3-putting? If you said no, you were either in complete denial or you're just a straight-up liar. Jokes aside, and in all reality, who doesn't? It's inevitable. We're all 3-putters. Well, let me introduce you to a new lifestyle brand for golf that is made for us. The 3-Putt Golf Company. Golf gear that meets the average golfer where they are, but looks like a professional brand. The first drop sold out in hours, but more are coming. Keep an eye out for the drop, discounts for That's Ball Folks listeners, giveaways, and more. 3-Putt Golf Company. Everybody 3-putts, look good doing it. Are you sick of spending time caring for your lawn? Have you spent too much time mowing it or even just keeping it alive? Are you tired of wasting resources and money watering it? If you are like me, the answer is yes to all of those. You should consider artificial grass. Beehive Turf out of northern Utah will transform your yard into looking beautiful all year round. Check out Beehive Turf on Instagram. Give them a call today for a free quote. Beehive Turf, take the sting out of caring for your lawn. Okay, now the real fun begins, and this is what I am most excited to talk about, and that is the women's college games. First off, do you know how hard it is for games to actually live up to the hype? Because I would argue that these two games that I'm going to talk about, they not only lived up to the hype, I think they exceeded it. They were amazing. They were so amazing that the viewing numbers backed it up, and these are ridiculous. This is just for the Iowa-LSU game. They averaged 12.3 million viewers. And to put it in context, that is more than every women's college basketball game ever, every ESPN college basketball game ever, every MLB game last season, every NHL game last season, every Major League Soccer game last season, every NBA game last season except one, which was Game 5 of the Finals, and every college football regular season game last season except one. How about that? That's unbelievable. Truly unbelievable. When we talk about Caitlin Clark being must-watch TV and must-see TV, like, that's literally exactly what we're talking about. That's insane. And here's the awesome part. Every single big-name player showed up. Caitlin Clark did. Angel Reese did. Juju Watkins and Paige, they did their thing in their game we'll talk about. But just a terrific night of hoops all around. And how fun that we can even have this conversation. And that we can talk about these numbers and actually spend a segment talking about real hoops on the women's side. It was just the best. Monday night was, I'm not exaggerating, probably top three favorite nights on Twitter for me because the timeline was nothing but love. It was all love. Everybody was just hyping up women's basketball and giving Caitlin Clark her props, Juju Watkins her props, Paige her props. And unless your name was Haley Van Lith, then my goodness, you were probably the only one. Oh man, I really hope that somebody who cares about Haley grabbed her and told her, hey, you should probably stay off social media, because it was pretty bad. Let's talk about Haley for a second. Why did LSU's coach decide to roll with her on Caitlin Clark? That wasn't a good call to begin with. And apparently Haley was sick as well, and she just threw her out there. Also, let's talk about Haley Van Lith for a sec. So I actually really like her. I've been a fan of hers for a long time, honestly, since high school. Kobe and Gigi, they would fly out to her games. That's when I started paying attention to her. I'm like, okay, this girl can really hoop. Been following her since then. She goes to Louisville. She's fantastic. She's an All-American. She decides, you know what? I want in on this love that LSU and Iowa were getting last year. I'm going to transfer to LSU. Now, in fairness to her, there are other reasons why people transfer outside of just basketball, right? There could have been some personal stuff in there, obviously a personal decision. Who knows? If you're looking at this just from a straight basketball standpoint, holy cow, what a miss. She averaged career low in literally every stat category. Everything. Bad fit. LSU, just a bad fit. Style of play, just trying to mesh into what they already built. Not good. And again, looking at it from a basketball standpoint, just a bad move. And then she gets thrown out to the Wolves, or the Wolf in Caitlin Clark, on the most watched college basketball game of all time. And now people are crushing her. Her draft stock is just non-existent. I would imagine that she comes back. And when she does come back, I hope that she transfers just for her sake, because I want her to get back at doing what Haley does. She's a good hooper. It was a bad move. And again, just from a basketball standpoint, bad move. Anyway, back to the Iowa-LSU game. That first half was legitimately some of the most fun basketball that I've watched, strictly based on the pace. It was insane. It obviously was not sustainable. It was so fast, back and forth, high scoring. The score going into halftime was 45-45. Just nuts. And then Caitlin Clark happened. But before we talk about that, LSU's game plan to start off the game was just guard. They put Haley on Caitlin Clark, and they played a little drop coverage, meaning when they set a pick, the guard goes under the pick, and the big is like dropped it down into the paint, like not even close, so she can't hedge up on Caitlin Clark. And they went under the screen every time. They did it like three straight times. And Caitlin Clark's like, okay, these are layups for me, and just cashed out from three. Now, obviously, they made an adjustment. That's good. But guess what? Caitlin Clark woke up, and it didn't matter. She was unconscious. Absolutely lights out from three. Like, we talk about lights out. She was lights out. She was unbelievable. She hit nine threes. She's, again, she is the most impressive college basketball player on the women's side that I have ever seen. She is so entertaining to watch. You run out of words. I tweeted this, but I'm like, you almost run out of words to describe what it's like watching her play, because every single game I tune into for her, which has been as many as I possibly can that are televised this year, I'm like, okay, she's got to have some type of drop off, right? She can't sustain this level. And she does, over and over and over again. She's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Her shot-making ability, not just her shot-making ability, but her difficult shot-making ability is unmatched. I've said it before, I'll say it again, I'm a broken record at this point, but she's the definition of must-see TV. She's terrific. Just terrific. Iowa gets their revenge. Caitlin Clark ends with an absurd 41 points, 12 assists, 7 rebounds. They get revenge on LSU, who beat them in the championship last year, and now they're headed to the Final Four to face UConn. Now, let's talk about this for a second, because Paige Buechers and UConn, their game against USC and freshman phenom Juju Watkins was also awesome. And here's what I love about both those girls. Juju first. Dame tweeted it, and I can't get it out of my head, but he was exactly right. He said that Juju is just like Melo at Syracuse. Get her the ball, let her create, let her go. And that's exactly who she is. Her game is so nasty. She is so nasty. She broke countless freshman records this season, including the all-time freshman scoring leader. She still ended that game with 29 points, 10 boards, had a couple blocks. Just a phenomenal talent. Watching her play is just so smooth. Her game, everything about it is just smooth. Some people, again, call her a chucker, but she carried USC on her back to this point, and a phenomenal freshman year. And then you look at Paige on the other side. Not only did she drop 28 points, 10 boards, 6 assists, but she picked up Juju all game. All game. Face guarding her up and down the court. She ended with 3 steals and 2 blocks. Paige is awesome. She's been awesome. She's coming off an ACL surgery, which was obviously devastating. She decides to, hey, I'm going to come back to UConn, give this thing one more go, get UConn back on track, and now she's got him back in the Final Four. And there was, I genuinely think this, there is a legitimate argument for who's the best player in college basketball right now on the girls' side. The casual just watcher who's tuned in for the last like couple weeks, they'll say Caitlin Clark. But Paige has been so dominant and well-rounded all season that I think there's a real argument. Now, if I have to pick somebody, I'm going to pick Caitlin Clark, obviously. She's a generational talent. But Paige is right there. Like, I don't think she's that far off. I don't, maybe 1A, 1B, but 1 and 2 right there. And I fully, firmly believe that. It's just fun, man. Basketball's fun. And again, how awesome that we can have this conversation. It's the best. It's just the best. And what's not the best is the NCAA. Let's talk about this for a second. multiple embarrassing things, like really, really embarrassing things on the women's side that have happened in this March Madness tournament. Simple things. Like, how did they play multiple games on a court with uneven three-point lines on either side? For those who don't know, somebody who was in attendance spotted, hey, that side, that three-point line is closer than that one is. And sure enough, they come out, they measure it, they are like, yeah, you're right. The teams agree to play through it, but how bad is that? How does that even happen? Like, cool of the teams to agree to play through it, but they didn't have to do that. They would have been more than justified to just be like, yeah, hell no, fix this, and then we'll play. That's crazy, but that's just the first. The second, how about the fact that they had to pull a referee who was reffing one of the March Madness, I believe the first round, at halftime, because they discovered that she graduated with a master's degree from one of the schools who was playing in the game that she was reffing. Like, how the hell does that happen? It's too ridiculous. It's insane. That stuff is not happening on the men's side. Whatever. You want to break it, like, say, oh, it's a men's, women's thing? That doesn't happen on the men's side. So, I don't know. I just love the attention that the women are getting right now. I hope that this momentum stays. I love everything about it. Absolutely love it. I cannot wait for the Final Four. That Iowa and UConn game is going to be unbelievable. And we didn't even talk about South Carolina. I'm going to say this right now. Nobody's going to beat South Carolina. They won't. South Carolina's too good. They're like ridiculously, like the overwhelming favorite. They're nasty. And fun that they're playing NC State. Both NC State men and women are in the Final Four. That's pretty cool. But South Carolina is a different beast. But I would love to see Iowa and South Carolina in that national championship game. And when you've got somebody like Caitlin Clark who's capable of dropping 40 on you any night, who knows? Who knows what can happen? One thing, too, talking with some buddies during the Iowa and LSU game, Iowa is much smaller. They were much smaller than LSU. Angel Reese just dominated. She had her way down low. How did Iowa not go out and get like a big and say, hey, come play with Caitlin Clark and have a chance to win a national championship? They've got a couple younger big girls, but even their bigs are nothing compared to LSU, and that's what I'm worried about with South Carolina, because I've said it 100 times, South Carolina is a different beast, right? They're 36-0. They haven't lost a season. Anyway, there you go. There's my rant. Now to the men's side. Let's talk about this. Duke broke my heart. My bracket's done. But NC State's run that they're on is just otherworldly. When you get hot, you get hot. And they're as hot as can be. Only problem for them is now that they run into Purdue and they're a beast. I said it last week, but if anyone other than UConn or Purdue wins, if they lose, I'll be shocked. UConn with yet another convincing win in the Elite Eight just beat the hell out of Illinois. Nobody's even given them a close game yet. Alabama did what Alabama does, though, and they outscore Clemson. I talked about it a while ago on an episode leading up to March Madness about Alabama, to keep an eye on them because they can score with anybody, and that's what they've been doing. I will be impressed to see if they can even keep it close with UConn, though, and again, give UConn their first close game because they're yet to have one. My bracket was looking real good after those first two games, and then Sunday rolled around, and NC State just dominated Duke. Big man DJ Burns, who is so awesome and so likable, just torched Duke. There was nothing they could do to stop him, and they end up pulling ahead and winning. Only problem is that now, well, we won't even talk about that matchup yet, but in Purdue's game, led by their big man Zach Edey, he drops 40 and 16, and they beat Tennessee. That's the matchup. It's DJ Burns versus Zach Edey, and we're going to dive into that in a second, but I want to talk about Zach Edey for a second because I mentioned it last episode, and I don't want to sound like a hater, but I'm going to sound like a hater for a second. There's some talk about him being a lottery pick, and he, in my eyes, he is absolutely not a lottery pick at all. He's a huge, huge human being who has soft hands and is skilled within 5 feet of the hoop. That's it. He cannot score outside of 5 feet. He is slow as hell. Purdue's offense is so funny, and it's actually painful to watch. It's literally lob it into Edey and stand around. They don't even cut. They just watch him do his thing, and I am not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of the way that he's reffed. I am not a fan of anything about Purdue. Edie is they're trying to play him off, and he even said post game of like nobody believed in me. I'm like, dude, you're 7-4 and you went to IMG Academy. You're not some underdog. Like, again, whatever. I am not sold. Edie is not a lottery talent. I do not think his game will translate into the NBA. Like, how on earth is he supposed to guard Joel Embiid or any of the other bigs? Once they stretch him out to the 3-point line, they're either getting an open look or they're going to blow right past him. He's too slow. Anyway, sorry, I'll get off my rant. But I do think that in this college setting, I think that ultimately Edie is just too big for DJ Burns, who I love, and NC State. And I think it's going to be UConn and Purdue in the championship. And it won't be fun to watch. it'll be fine. It'll be fine to watch. But speaking of not fun to watch, why don't the men have four quarters? Why do they have two halves? Because four quarters is night and day better. The flow of the game is better. Why are they the only ones who don't have it? I don't know. I would actually love to hear a argument for why two halves is better. And I know one of the arguments, I'm sure, will be the old heads who are like, oh, it's college basketball. It's always been that way. Cool. We'll change because four quarters is better. And watching the girls play, I'm not going to lie, it was more entertaining for many reasons. But the flow of the game through four quarters, I think, was a big reason. And I want to know. I want to know a real argument for keeping two halves, so let me know. Anyway, that's all I got. Again, I could talk about this for so long, but I wanted to keep it short because A, I'm traveling, B, I'm tired, and C, I don't want to just rant. I want to keep it a little condensed so that you guys don't have to listen to my nasally voice. So you're welcome. Real fast, that's all the hoop talk, of course, but baseball. How about baseball being back? That's fun. And Bryce Harper had a hat trick of home runs last night, including Grand Slam. That's fun. Was tweeting it throughout. Just, it is a very exciting 48 hours to be a Philadelphia sports fan. With Bryce Harper getting hot, Joel Embiid coming back, things looking up, especially after an abysmal start for the Phillies and a brutal stretch without Joel Embiid. And then the Eagles offseason, phenomenal. Exciting time to be a Philly sports fan. Just delightful. Hopefully Bryce Harper gets hot and stays hot. Hopefully Embiid's knee reacts well to playing forever last night. And yeah, we'll go from there. But again, that's all I got. Love you guys. Love doing these. If you feel so inclined, go ahead, like, subscribe, review, do all that fun stuff. 1 star, 5 stars, doesn't matter at all. Follow me on Twitter, at JoshReynolds24. I'm finally starting to do some giveaways again. Once Embiid came back and it kind of pumped some life back into me, I'm like, you know what? I haven't done a giveaway forever. So let's start to do these. I'm feeling happy. So let's do it. Maybe we'll even do one. If Caitlin Clark and I will make a run, let's give away a Caitlin Clark jersey or something. I don't know. Let's get crazy with it. We can do whatever we want. But yeah, that's all I got. Love you guys. Be nice to each other. Have a great week. And that's all, folks.